Now to COVID vaccine confidence. The percentage of Americans eager to get the COVID vaccine has been increasing over time. That's according to the Kaiser Family Foundation's COVID Vaccine Monitor. It's a research project tracking our attitudes and experiences with COVID vaccines. What questions do you have about people who aren't rolling up their sleeve? Do you feel isolated in your group of friends in terms of getting vaccinated? What do you say? Conversation here, 800-642-1234. Liz Hamill is Vice President and Director of Public Opinion and Survey Research at the Kaiser Family Foundation. Liz, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, the term vaccine hesitancy is in the headlines a lot. How common is it really in our country as you look at it through the window into your polling?
Yeah, well, first off, I would say that the term itself, vaccine hesitancy, is a bit of an oversimplification. I think for people who aren't yet ready to get the vaccine, they have a range of questions and concerns, and it's not necessarily just about their attitudes about being hesitant. That said, what we've found in our survey work, we've been tracking this since December, and we found that as more people see their friends and family members get vaccinated, people's enthusiasm for getting the vaccine themselves has increased. So back in December, about a third of the public said that they were ready to get the vaccine as soon as it was available to them. And then in our latest survey in March, that number had increased to 6 in 10 who had either already gotten the vaccine or were ready to get it as soon as possible. And, you know, we also see a big chunk of the public that says they just want to wait and see how the vaccine is working for others before getting it themselves. And that group has continued to shrink over time. So that was 39% back in December and down to 17% in our most recent survey. So, you know, that's good news that as people have waited and seen, more of them have said, okay, now I'm ready to get the vaccine as soon as I can. There is a group, though, and it's about 1 in 5 of the public that says they either definitely won't get the vaccine or they'll only get it if it's required for work or school or other activities. And that group really hasn't changed over time. It's been about the same size of the public since December.
So we're going to get to that 1 in 5 in just a moment. But I'm wondering, what I think I'm hearing is that our sphere of influence, our family and friends, carry a lot of weight in deciding whether we're going to roll up our sleeve.
Yeah, and we've actually seen that in our surveys when we ask people if they know someone who's been vaccinated. People who have someone close to them, either in their household or a close family member or friend, are much more likely to say that they want to get the vaccine compared to people who only know casual acquaintances or don't know anyone who's been vaccinated yet.
Vaccine confidence has improved among Black Americans in recent weeks. Can you tell us what you're finding there?
Yeah, so what we saw early on was that both Black adults and Hispanic adults were more likely to be in that wait and see category in the first few months of our tracking. And they were also much less likely to know people who had been vaccinated. So early on, and I think continuing, the vaccines have been going disproportionately to white adults, to people with higher incomes. But we have seen for all groups, including for Black Americans, that confidence has increased over time, although Black adults do still, they are still more likely to be in that wait and see group compared to white adults.
What about the pause on the J&J vaccine, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine pause? What impact might have that had on public opinion and these vaccines?
Yeah, we have not yet completed a survey since that pause happened, but I have seen other surveys that suggest that, the pause did cause people's confidence in the J&J vaccine itself to be lower compared to the other vaccines, but it doesn't seem to have slowed down people's intentions to get any COVID-19 vaccine. So we're tracking this now and should have new data out next week. One of the things I can say is that before the pause, the J&J vaccine did have an appeal to a group of people that was really interested in being able to just get one shot.
One and done. So,
Yeah, among people in that wait and see group, they were more likely to say that they would get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine as opposed to the Pfizer or Moderna. We just don't know if that will still be the case after this pause.
Let's bring in Sharon in Ashland County. Hi, Sharon. What's your situation?
As I was telling your person here, I've been trying to get a vaccination ever since the pandemic started. And even before they had one, I was looking desperately for a way to get a vaccination in some form or another. Now there are these vaccinations, but I have a terrible time trying to get the information to use to contact somebody about getting one. For some reason, and well, I think part of it is because I live in kind of an internet dead zone here in northern Wisconsin. And so it's very hard to lots of times get any information that's provided online. It'll say, call this, do that. And there's no way I can do that because there's no internet access. And so it makes it really, really hard. And I really would like to get this done. But I, every time I try to, you know, I'll hear a snippet on the radio or something about how to, you know, contact this, call this number. And just like that, it's gone. And it's already too late for me to get it written down. So it's incredibly frustrating. I feel like I'm constantly chasing after a ghost.
Chasing after information. Liz, access still an issue.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons that I think sometimes we focus a lot on hesitancy, but are not, you know, well, I think people are focusing on access as well, but hesitancy is not the only problem. There are people out there who want the vaccine and still tell us in our surveys that they don't have enough information about how to get it or where to get it. Or people are also concerned about being able to get it from a place that they trust. Yes, I think we, even though everybody in the U.S. is, or all adults in the U.S. are now eligible to get the vaccine, there are still access barriers out there that need to be addressed to make sure people can get it when they want it.
Liz Hamill, she heads up public opinion and survey research at the Kaiser Family Foundation. Have you convinced someone to get vaccinated? What seemed to help that conversation? Is a loved one choosing to stay unvaccinated? What are your interactions like with them? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead with Liz Hamill here on the Ideas Network. Now we're tracking public opinion on COVID vaccines. The Kaiser Family Foundation has found through its ongoing research that vaccine confidence in our country has increased as more and more people have seen their friends and family members get vaccinated. Is that the case in your circles? If you haven't gotten vaccinated, what's stopping you? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Liz Hamill is Vice President and Director of Public Opinion and Survey Research at the Kaiser Family Foundation. She's with us for the hour. Patrick is joining us from Richland County. Hi, Patrick. What's on your mind?
Well, good morning, Kate, and another great program.
Thanks.
I've been vaccinated personally for a while now, fully vaxxed, and I'll tell anybody out there, it is a major relief. It's really good. Anyway, my question is, if the vaccine were dangerous, do you think that the people that are running the country, like the top politicians and the top economic leader, Bill Gates and the like, do you think if it was dangerous, they would have been the first ones to get it? I mean, DeSantis put it up for sale in Florida, and the richest people got it first. So I'm just wondering there.
Patrick is thinking about the optics here. And, you know, the influencers in our country, the leaders of our country, you know, getting the vaccine and showing that they've gotten the vaccine. What impact does that have, Liz?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And, you know, one of the things that we've learned in our research is that people who haven't gotten the vaccine yet really want it to be their own personal choice. And when we ask people who could influence them to get vaccinated, they actually say they're not particularly interested in seeing politicians or celebrities get vaccinated, that they really want to make this decision for themselves. When you ask them who they trust for information, at the top of the list is individual healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, and other people like that. That's even ahead of official sources like the CDC. Or Dr. Anthony Fauci, you know, people are telling us they don't necessarily want to hear from politicians or celebrities on this issue.
But how often do you find that they're actually reaching out and asking their healthcare providers for information?
Yeah, that is also a great question. So while people say they trust their doctors the most, we've found in our latest polling that only about a quarter of people have actually asked their doctor so far for information about the vaccine. That was a couple of months ago, so it may have increased by now. And in the meantime, we know that media and social media is filling the void of information for people, and that sometimes the information that they're getting is not always accurate.
So as people turn to social media, notably Facebook, among, you know, those prominent sources for information on the vaccine, what does that mean for public health officials? How do they navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when it comes to information that or misinformation that people might come across, I think the best advice if someone comes to you with misinformation is not to repeat that misinformation and not to tell them that they're wrong, because sometimes people have very strongly held beliefs, but to try and direct them to accurate information. And, you know, some of the information that we've found that works best to increase people's confidence in the vaccines is to let them know how effective the vaccines are, especially when it comes to preventing hospitalization and death from COVID-19. We found that that's the piece of information that is really most likely to resonate with people and make them more likely to want to get the vaccine.
So what you're saying is the hard facts really matter at the end of the day.
Yeah, they do. And I think they just need to keep being repeated and keep putting out there from different sources over time.
Liz Hamel is Vice President and Director of Public Opinion and Survey Research at the Kaiser Family Foundation. They launched their public opinion tracking dashboard on COVID vaccines back in December, and she's looking at those trend lines with us. Is everyone getting vaccines and that you're not comfortable yet? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation on the Ideas Network. Now to shifting attitudes on the COVID vaccine and who is eager to roll up their sleeve, who isn't. The Kaiser Family Foundation has interviewed more than 11,000 adults nationwide since December to track public opinion and experiences with COVID vaccines. What questions do you have about their survey data and their insights? Did the pause on the J&J vaccine change your perspective? How so? What are you hearing about COVID vaccines on social media? What are you hearing from your primary care physician? Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. Liz Hamel is Vice President and Director of Public Opinion and Survey Research at the Kaiser Family Foundation. Liz, let's talk about politics here for a moment. What can you tell us about vaccine uptake among Democrats and Republicans?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've seen, you know, since we've been tracking this starting in December, that Democrats were much more eager to get the vaccine. And a larger share of Republicans said that they were definitely not going to get it. And I think this reflects some broader partisan divides we've seen over the past year when it comes to the pandemic in general. For a lot of those who say they're definitely not going to get the vaccine, they believe that the seriousness of the pandemic has been exaggerated in the news. They're less likely to be worried about actually getting sick from coronavirus. And they're less likely to say things like they wear masks when they leave their house. So they have a different set of attitudes.
Yeah. So, you know, mask wearing and personal liberties have also collided here with public health in the pandemic. So for messaging aimed at hesitant Republicans, surveys suggest a focus on protecting personal health based on their concerns. Can you elaborate on that thinking?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think is important is that, you know, people want this to be their own personal choice. And so I think messaging that focuses on letting people know that this is their choice and helping give them information about why it should be the best choice for them But also ultimately that it's up to them to get vaccinated is what's most likely going to resonate, particularly with Republican audiences who are concerned about their personal freedoms.
Let's look more broadly at the economic impact and opening up Main Street businesses, large venues. Would vaccine requirements by the government or by businesses or venues or companies or travel industries, would that move the needle on vaccines?
Yeah, we tested some of those things, and we found that, among those who are on the fence about getting the vaccine, about 4 in 10 of them said they would be more likely to get it if airlines required it for travel. So there is some sense that people would be responsive to requirements. You know, at the same time, a significant share of people are concerned about being required to get the vaccine, even though they don't want to. Hmm. And so I think that, there could also be pushback against requirements, depending on how they're rolled out.
So if targeting messaging at hesitant groups or Republicans, how much is there a risk of that backfiring when, another subgroup of hesitant people, what is the friction there?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult line to walk, because there are messages and things that will work with that group that is really on the fence and saying they want to wait and see what's going to happen with other people before they get the vaccine themselves. And for them, some of those requirements might work. But for those people that are starting out from a place of not wanting to get the vaccine at all, we've seen very few messages actually work to try and convince them. And they may be turned off by some of those messages that are targeted at the wait and see group. So that said, I think it's appropriate for those who are looking to increase vaccination rates to focus on that wait and see group and addressing their concerns and questions, because they are the most likely to be converted compared to those who are, starting out from a place of, I'm definitely not going to get this.
We're talking about vaccines and experiences, the studies at the Kaiser Family Foundation, their dashboard, their tracker, Liz Hamill, our guide on their surveys. You can join in on how your feelings have evolved, perhaps, on the COVID vaccine. 800-642-1234. Liz, let's talk about rural and urban. How are views of the vaccine different in rural and urban areas?
Yeah, what we have seen is that people living in rural areas are more likely to say they don't want to get the vaccine compared to those living in urban and suburban areas. But what we see is that actually largely reflects the demographic makeup. So if we do a more sophisticated analysis and control for some of the other demographic factors of who lives in urban versus rural areas, that largely explains the greater hesitancy in rural areas. So there's nothing particular about somebody living in a rural area that makes them more likely to not want to get the vaccine. A lot of it has to do with the politics of who lives where. And as we discussed, that Republicans are more likely to say they don't want to get the vaccine. And so or rural areas just have a larger share of people who identify as Republicans living there.
Well, let's look at that camp that you mentioned earlier, the 1 in 5 statistic there, who are definitely no. How could public health authorities engage with people who say absolutely not, won't get vaccinated?
Yeah, I think that is a really great question. And it's something that we don't really have the answers to yet, because as I mentioned, the messages that we've tested so far have not been successful at resonating with more than even 1 in 10 of people in that definitely not group. I think that it is sort of a longer term game with that group in terms of just continuing to, repeat the messages about the effectiveness of the vaccine, but also making it clear that it's their choice whether to get the vaccine. Again, I think, pushing them to feel like they're going to be required to get it when they don't want to is going to likely turn them off.
So turning now to your research here, your tracking, how long do you intend to keep sampling the public on the COVID vaccine? How long will this dashboard go?
Yeah, we've committed to sticking with this issue, you know, for a long time. So at least through the middle of next year, you know, we know that the last several months has been a big ramp up with the rollout and distribution. But we want to keep tracking as the efforts continue to reach those people who were not in that most eager group. I think we're already seeing in some areas around the country where supply of the vaccine is starting to exceed demand, and we will keep tracking people's ability to get the vaccine over time.
Liz, I have to say, though, some people say polling and they kind of roll their eyes because polling gets a bad rap, this point in time analysis. What do you want people to use and learn from this data that you're gathering? I mean, you've talked with more than 11,000 people.
Yeah, and it is difficult as, you know, an individual and an organization that sinks a lot of resources into doing our surveys really well and to really representing all the various groups in the country. We spend a lot of money to do this the right way to make sure that we can accurately be representing not only, you know, the country overall, but groups that make up smaller shares of the population, like Black adults and Hispanic adults and people living in rural areas. And, you know, I understand that it's hard to tell a good, high quality survey from a quick and dirty poll. And yeah, also that, you know, this gets mixed up with some of the misses in political polling over the years. But we really, one thing we're really committed to is transparency and making our data fully available to the public, to people on the ground who are, you know, trying to understand maybe what's going on in their own communities, and how to reach people, what kinds of questions people have. So we put all this data out there, and we're always happy to share our insights and what we're learning from the research.
Curious too, how do you shape your questions, and are your questions evolving over time in your surveys?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every month we're looking at what is happening out there and what do we think is going to be happening in the next few weeks, and what kinds of questions will help inform, you know, what's happening on the ground. And so some questions we repeat over time, but with each survey, we're crafting new questions based on what we hear from, you know, from public health officials about what kind of information would be useful, what our policy colleagues tell us they need to know from the public. So it's definitely an evolving process.
All right. But you said it here. What is happening? What are you watching for in the coming weeks as you anticipate how attitudes and experiences may change with the vaccine?
Yeah, a couple things that we're looking for is, you know, what is the impact of the J&J pause? Is there a short-term impact or a longer-term impact on vaccine confidence? And how does that differ by gender, knowing that most of these blood clots occurred in women? Is this going to lead to a change in women's attitudes towards getting the vaccine? We're looking at that. And then, you know, also as we reach this stage where in many places, vaccine supply is exceeding demand, how does that change? You know, we're no longer dealing with people, at least soon, I think we won't be dealing with people who are eager but can't yet get the vaccine. We'll really be looking at people who are still holding out and trying to understand more about why they're not ready to get the vaccine yet and what might change their minds.
Liz, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Liz Hamel is Vice President and Director of Public Opinion and Survey Research at the Kaiser Family Foundation. We have a link to their COVID-19 Vaccine Monitor Dashboard. It's at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.